I would like to start this podcast off with a Bible reading. Ezekiel 25:17. I will execute great vengeance on them with furious rebukes, and they shall know that I am the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon them. You know what that's from?
Well, I know part of it's from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, and the other part is from, I believe it's Street Fighter, starring Sonny Chiba. I could be wrong, but it's definitely a Sonny Chiba movie. I know that much.
Oh, what a surprise. Tarantino borrowing something from another film that's somewhat obscure in America.
And I don't want to rip on Tarantino too much. I want to just rip this film apart because it is easily Tarantino's worst movie that he's ever made. Jackie Brown, of course, being his best, because Jackie Brown, Tarantino is known for stealing from movies. Even his first film, Reservoir Dogs, is a ripoff of Ringo Lam's City on Fire. And it, like, seriously, if you watch City on Fire and you watch Reservoir Dogs, the climax is basically the same. There's even a part where Chow Yun-Fat whips out two guns and shoots at a car, just like Harvey Keitel does in Reservoir Dogs. However, Jackie Brown fixes all of the classic Tarantino problems where he just steals from other movies. He actually made a decent blaxploitation film without just having to steal from other blaxploitation movies. Pulp Fiction literally has no point. There is no point to that movie at all, other than, hey guys, watch me tell my story sort of out of order. Woo!
And that isn't an original thing either. He's not the first filmmaker to do a non, you know, film edited not in sequence of time of events or whatever, you know. It's not in chronological order.
Right. It'd been going on in French cinema for years before that. But everybody, but all the Americans, because I don't want to read no subtitles, all the Americans figured, like, oh, this is snazzy and cool and original, but it's not. So I don't know why this is relevant, but are you aware that Zed and Buford, I don't know his name, the guy who runs the pawn shop, Maynard?
Maynard.
Okay.
Yeah, Maynard.
They're brothers. Did you know that?
No, I did not, but I've heard that whole scene was inspired by Deliverance, the film, anyway. Because in the books, not to digress here, but in the books, that whole, you know, male rape scene doesn't happen. But Tarantino more or less was inspired by that, I guess, to create Zed and Maynard and the whole pawn shop scene.
Which is just such a ridiculous scene in and of itself. Like, right. And I don't know why, like, it even has the masturbatory Japanese culture thing, because how does Bruce Willis kill him? He uses a samurai sword, which, if you don't know, samurai swords are fucking trash. A lot of people love to go on about, like, samurai swords being, oh, they're folded 19 times or whatever the fuck. But the thing is in real life, like, you don't need to fold swords because the iron is good enough. They use pig iron to make samurai swords. They basically are using literal garbage to make samurai swords.
That is true. And more importantly, to use a samurai sword properly, you have to have training. The way that Willis kind of uses it is almost like you're, you know, average person just picking one up. It's not an effective cutting weapon when you don't know how to properly manipulate it. Parting, I studied the blade.
If you want proof that you have to know how to use a samurai sword, we have linked a video down below called Greg Nearly Kills Us. It features our friend Gregory Loden using a samurai sword, and the sword flies off because Gregory is not trained in using the sword. Speaking of YouTube real quick, I just want to thank YouTube so much for removing the dislike bar, because it shows how many people agree with us, and it's not going to show anybody who disagrees with us, because those people don't exist. Everyone agrees that Pulp Fiction is ass.
Yep, it's true. Thank you, YouTube. So, respect the Pulp Fiction.
I don't know if you know this. The beginning scene and the ending scene of Pulp Fiction are wrong. Did you know that?
Oh, I did, because I know the dialogue changes between Pumpkin and Honey Bunny when they hold up the restaurant.
Right. I think her opening line is, "Any of you fucking pigs move and I'll execute every last one, motherfucking one of you," or something like that. And the ending line is, "Any of you motherfuckers move," or something. And it's different. However, Tarantino fanboys have justified this. They go, he's telling the story from a different perspective. He's telling the story from a different timeline. Instead of saying Tarantino fucked up.
Well, he's such a directing genius.
I wonder if he's telling it from the timeline where he made a Vega Brothers movie.
Or he failed to. In our timeline. Because basically John Travolta and Michael Madsen got too old.
And too fat. I mean, I'm sorry. Michael Madsen, look, I love you so much. I want you to know, Michael Madsen, if you're listening to this podcast, if I was making movies back in the early 90s, I would make a Resident Evil movie with you as Chris Redfield. I just want to say that. But Tarantino has numerous ways he could have told this story. He has so much money. He didn't need to tell it as a movie. He went and wrote a book for his latest movie. He's like, "I'm going to go write a book now, guys. Why don't you go write a Vega Brothers book? Why don't you make a why don't you be like my stupid ass and make a comic book out of a movie you can't make?"
Yeah, it would have been a good idea. He probably would have made a lot of money off of it.
I'd buy a Vega Brothers book. I'd buy a Vega Brothers comic. It'd be cool, but...
Yeah, I would too.
And can we discuss Tarantino's foot fetish, please?
I'm not trying to kink shame anyone when I say that. It's a fetish. I don't get it. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to kink shame anyone. But.
Well, here's the thing, okay? I used to be under the impression, right? I used to be under this impression. I was so naive. I was under the impression that, like, having a foot fetish was like being into a girl who had, like, you know, nice arch support, you know, had nice looking feet. That's not what it's about. Yeah. And
with a nice pedicure and all that.
Right. That's what I thought it was all about. But no, Tarantino proved me wrong, because Tarantino loves showing Uma Thurman's nasty ass motherfucking feet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not
disrespect to Uma Thurman, but it's like, why, Tarantino? Why?
I'm willing to bet that the only reason he put that dance sequence in the Jackrabbit Slim scene was just because she would have to take off her shoes to dance. I'm thinking that's the only reason that was in there. I mean, I know Travolta's a good dancer and all that. He's, you know, a triple threat. You know, he could sing, dance, and act. He can, still, probably, but I think that's the only reason why he put that in there.
I'm going to be mean. I'm going to say I question John Travolta's ability to act. I think I've seen one movie where I like John Travolta, and that's Blowout. Like, everybody says, like, he's so good in this movie, but he's so dull. Like, nothing, he doesn't react to anything. He's just like, "Hey, man, it's me, John Travolta, and I'm acting with long hair. Hey." And which I think, by the way, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I think it's a wig.
I'm not really sure. It might be. I really don't know. I mean, I know what you mean about him being way too laid back, like, you know, "Oh, I just shot Marvin in the face." It explodes inside the car, and he's just so casual about it.
Right, and the thing is like, Samuel Jackson, who's apparently been doing this for longer, he's even like, "Motherfucker, what'd you do? What did you do? You shot him in the face," you know? Samuel Jackson is all freaking out, who... From my understanding in the film is that Samuel Jackson has been doing this for a long time. It freaks Samuel Jackson out, but John Travolta is just like, "Whoa, man, where'd your brains go?" And then can we just say this? Damn it, Tarantino, now I know what John Travolta's bitch titties look like. Moving on, Samuel L. Jackson. I don't think this needs to be said. Samuel L. Jackson steals this movie. Samuel L. Jackson murders every scene he's in. But you know what? Samuel L. Jackson did the same thing with the friggin' Star Wars prequels, so that's not saying much.
I think the only difference was is that the Star Wars prequels wouldn't let him use the word motherfucker. They gave him a purple lightsaber instead.
I don't see the appeal of Pulp Fiction. It seems to be one of those movies that only autistic people quote, like, to sound cool to their friends. Like, they'll just randomly quote it just to let their friends know, hey, I've seen Pulp Fiction. There was somebody on set one time who just started quoting the part about, hey, Jimmy, this is some great coffee you've got here. By the way, can we talk about the scene with Tarantino saying "nigger" over and over again? I discussed this with you earlier. I said I feel like Tarantino was sort of playing the joke from Desperado. If you have not seen Desperado, which, by the way, is a better movie than Pulp Fiction, there is a joke that Tarantino tells about a guy going into a bar and pissing all over the bar. And basically, he bet three guys in the bar $1,000 a piece that he could piss all over the bar and the bartender would be happy. It's a stupid joke. And I feel like Tarantino made a bet and goes, I bet you I could say to a black man over and over and over again. And not only will he not be mad, he'll be happy and just let me do it.
Don't worry about that.
So he proceeds to say the gamer word to Samuel Jackson numerous times, and then has his friend Robert Rodriguez direct the scene.
That wasn't even the only use of that word in the film.
But it's the scene everyone remembers, because Tarantino more than likely made a bet that he could do that. Why is it so funny that Christopher Walken wore a watch up his ass for 3 years or whatever?
Yeah, again, that was one of those things that didn't really seem to fit in with the context of the film. It's like Tarantino wanted to put Christopher Walken in it. I mean, we understand the significance of the watch to Butch's character, but all that exposition.
Well, and I'll be honest, I feel like I know I said the movie has no point, and it doesn't. There's no purpose in anything that happens in this movie. However, I feel like the only story that has a beginning, middle, and end is the watch. And despite the fact that, like, you know, the rape scene just feels so out of place and it's so ridiculous, but it goes along with the ridiculousness of the watch story. But the thing is most people do not like the watch segment. They, you know, they go, oh yeah, it's kind of, you know, this low point until the rape happens. And then the movie gets back to John Travolta being cool. And it's like, if John Travolta is the main character of this movie and his segments are the weakest, what does that say about the movie? I don't know where Uma Thurman went, like where she picked up on drugs or her character. I'm just going to call her Uma Thurman because I don't remember her character's name. I couldn't be bothered to remember her character's name, but where did Uma Thurman learn to do drugs that she goes into some guy's pocket and just finds a white powder and goes, I'm going to sniff this shit. Bitch, that could have been Arm & Hammer carpet fresh for all you know, and you're just snorting it. Let's just be honest. That could have been John Travolta's powdered sugar supply, you know? he needs more powder for his donuts, so he just sprinkles it on in the car, you know? You never know what it is.
What it is something as a plot device to move the story forward.
But
a contrived plot device.
What story? I've seen numerous people put this on a list. They like to put best interracial couples together, and that's fine. I don't care about that. But they always put Uma Thurman in Ving Rhames' character. They always put them on a list together, and I go, but why? They have one scene together, and like she's out there drinking mimosas or something, and Ving Rhames is on the phone. That's their one scene together. How are they the best interracial couple? They have done nothing.
There's like no interaction between them at all at any point in the film. I mean, like you said, they're in that one scene together, but they don't even interact at all.
And I don't even think that there's any of the cut material in which they interact. But everybody goes, oh, this is such a great interracial couple. So fantastic, so stunning and brave. But they don't do anything. If you guys don't know, the LGBTQ community gets angry because they're like, why are you putting lesbian characters in a movie but not doing anything with them? Why the fuck are you putting an interracial couple in a movie and not doing anything with them? And I want to remind you, this movie came out in 1994 when being an interracial couple was not as common as it is today. So it could have been something really, really grand, but they decided not to do anything with it.
I was going to say something like, you know, the whole MacGuffin thing with the suitcase and all that. I mean, isn't it at this point, like, even before, like, back in the mid-90s, a MacGuffin just kind of a lazy writing tactic? I mean, you know, people speculate that, oh, well, it's Marcellus' soul or it's something else or whatever. And, you know, the whole scene that kicked the, you know, film off, well, actually, no, not the opening scene was the diner robbery, or at least the initial one with the wrong dialogue or proper dialogue, who knows. But like the, you know, to get the suitcase back, which belongs to Marcellus. To me, it's just like, okay, well, they got to get this item back. We're going to fill in the blanks later, and they never really filled in the blank. So.
Well, there's literally, like, despite being a MacGuffin, like, Alfred Hitchcock was a huge... He always used MacGuffins. Like, that's actually where I found out the word MacGuffin, was I read Hitchcock Truffaut, which, if you guys are super into film and you have not read Hitchcock Truffaut, it is a book I highly recommend to you. It is an interview with Francois Truffaut and Alfred Hitchcock. It is a fantastic book, and it gives you insight into several of Hitchcock's movies. It's a really good book, and I highly recommend it, unlike Pulp Fiction. But the thing about like the MacGuffin is like the MacGuffin usually has like a purpose, right? It does something. I don't. Do they even drop off the MacGuffin to Marcellus Wallace?
I don't even think we see him do it, in all honesty, because after they get back from Jimmy's place, when the wolf comes in and they get the car crushed and all that, they head to the diner, and I mean, I'm guessing they dropped it off eventually because Jules decides that he's going to quit. So I'm guessing they did, but we never really see them do that.
I think we do. I think that is the scene in because the thing is you're not paying much attention to it. I think that's what Jules goes to do when he's talking to when Butch and Vincent. I was gonna call him Vic. I might have been calling him Vic this whole time because Tarantino was extremely lazy and decided to name them Vic and Vincent, which. I mean, like, I'm fine with Vic or Vincent. Like, if you go for one or the other, that's fine. But come up with a better name for the other brother. I know Mr. Blonde is Vic Vega because I love Reservoir Dogs, as I've probably stated. Reservoir Dogs is another better movie than Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is Tarantino's worst movie. Inglourious Basterds. I know Noel is going to disagree with me about this because he's putting together this long-ass review of Inglourious Basterds. But the first 20 minutes of Inglourious Basterds is perhaps the best 20 minutes ever committed to celluloid. It's an extremely tense moment. This normal farm family, they're hanging out, doing their farm family stuff. The Nazis show up. Then this Nazi guy comes in and he just starts talking about all this stuff. And it's 20 minutes. It's amazing because the whole time you are aware, as the audience, we are aware that there are Jews in the house. You know? It's so tense. And yet he does absolutely nothing that good in Pulp Fiction at all. And I don't want anyone saying, well, you know, he learned his craft and he did this and he did this. Bitch, you know what? He did better job on My Best Friend's Birthday. He did better jobs with tension in just like knowing what to show and all that stuff in Reservoir Dogs. He did better. He did a fantastic job directing those two movies than he did Pulp Fiction. So I'm sorry for interrupting you. I wanted to say that because, like I said, I think easily this is his worst film. I think this is worse than Death Proof.
Oh. Yeah.
Because, you know what? You know what Death Proof had? You don't know what Death Proof had? Death Proof had the original Disney star, Kurt Russell.
Yep, that's right.
It also has Kurt Russell getting a lap dance.
That's true.
Two things that Pulp Fiction does not have.
I know we were kind of past the point of that first 20 minutes of Inglourious Basterds, but just the minute details that are in there, particularly from Christopher Waltz's acting as a Hans Landa. You know, there's like little hints that are dropped in there that he already knows, and he's just trying to entrap the farmer into revealing, you know, that he's, hiding Jews under his floorboard. It's really interesting because I remember watching this one video about the character, actually. It was this series of villains on YouTube. They mentioned, like, how that whole scene was just, you know, cemented as to how evil he was, because he knew what he was doing. He was knowing me. He was just trying to trap him. He was just playing with a farmer. But again, I'm kind of digressing here. But again, that just goes to show you how much better the first 20 minutes of Inglourious Basterds is compared to all of Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction was basically written on a DMT trip in Amsterdam.
Really?
I don't think he was on DMT, but he basically wrote it while in Amsterdam and just like wrote all the ideas down and was just like stoned out of his mind with Roger Avery.
I thought DMT was supposed to expand your mind.
Maybe the problem is we're not watching Pulp Fiction on DMT.
Watching it the right way. Someone call up Joe Rogan.
I was going to say that. Joe Rogan, please sponsor our podcast. Please send us DMT so we can understand Pulp Fiction. One of the other things, and this is actually true, I would say probably this is true about most Tarantino movies, and it's an aspect that I really don't like. But the thing is there's no soundtrack to the movie. And I know people are going to go, well, Misirlu by Dick Dale is in there, and Jungle Boogie is in there, and a shitty cover of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon is in there. And it's like, so?
You mean that there's no orchestral backing for any scenes or any sound cues or anything like that?
And it doesn't even need to be orchestral. Like, from my personal taste, I've used rock bands. I've used a dude with his cello. I've used all sorts of things for music because I absolutely love music, and I'm constantly wanting to to incorporate my love for music into my love for film. But it's like Tarantino just goes, yeah, just fucking throw every soundtrack or every song from all these albums, just throw them in there. He doesn't bother to actually get a score going. And he did that with like Inglourious Basterds, which again is why it's better.
It does seem to be missing that, and I know what you mean too. He's like, it doesn't have to be orchestral or anything like that, but I'm not sure why. It just seems to be lacking because of it. But okay, I'm gonna make this, gonna buy all these songs and use them in my film. Okay,
because I have the one thing no other director has: a big giant head.
Okay. Rest in peace, Norm MacDonald.
So, what is the purpose of the GIMP? Like, I never understood the purpose of the GIMP. Like, I understand, like, the bring out the GIMP scene and stuff, but what was the GIMP supposed to do? He literally stood there and just stared at Bruce Willis the whole time. And then when Bruce Willis breaks free, the GIMP just stands there and goes, "Woo!" and then dies. What is the purpose of the GIMP?
I really don't know. I think it was just to try to make the scene even more weird and disturbing, I guess. Or maybe it was some sort of secret fantasy.
Maybe it was Tarantino trying to appear cool, you know? Guys, look, I know about GIMPs. I know several directors who really want to appear cool, so they like work stupid crap into their movies. But by the time their movie comes out, like it's such an overused and stale meme by this point that nobody cares. And I think that may have been the case with the GIMP.
Unnecessary element to a scene that wasn't really that necessary. And
however, the best thing to come out of the GIMP scene is Postal 2. Why does anybody like Uma Thurman's character? I don't understand that. Like I've heard people say, "Oh yeah, she's a great female character." What about her is good? What about her is intriguing? What about, like, nothing about her is interesting?
Yep, I don't get it at all. I mean, really only see her in interact with Vincent in just those one scenes. I don't think she has any other parts in the movie. And, she doesn't really seem like she's that unique or anything like that. I mean, I'm not saying she's a basic bitch, but...
But nothing about her character is standout. Nothing about, and this is not just, you know, ooh, she's a female character and she's not very well developed. She's not a well developed character, no matter what gender she is. It's garbage.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you know, she's just there to provide dialogue, you know, something to, you know, Vincent to interact with.
She's furniture.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have never understood. Like, I don't even know why she was used so much in the promotion material, because she's barely in the movie.
That's true. When you come to think of it, you know, she's really the only main female character in the film that I know of. I mean, the only other females I can think of are just extras or... you know, just have like maybe one scene.
Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah. And, what's her name at the wrecking yard there?
Steve. I heard somebody once say, like, Tarantino writes, like, the best female characters they've ever seen. And I
maybe Jackie Brown, but that was his magnum opus. So
actually, Inglourious Basterds is his magnum opus, but Jackie Brown is my personal favorite movie. Pam Grier is fantastic in the movie, but Tarantino often writes women like he has never associated with a woman in his life. That was until around the point that he did Jackie Brown, because maybe he hadn't interacted with a woman in his entire life.
That could be, because Reservoir Dogs was an entire sausage fest. There wasn't a female character in that movie at all, except for the woman that was Mr. Orange. One of them tries to carjack and she shoots him.
Pulp Fiction is basically the epitome of incel movies. So, basically, I don't know. I feel we've made a fairly good point as to why this movie is terrible. There's the color palette is not that good. I mean, you want to talk technical aspects. The color palette is very bland. It's a very 90s color palette. Tarantino talks about himself like he is the grandmaster of cinema in the 90s, and that he's the whole reason why cinema is as good as it is. Do you know what Tarantino? El Mariachi, which is one of my favorite indie movies, has a better color palette than Pulp Fiction does. And that was made for $7,500. How much? You had $8 million to dump on Pulp Fiction.
I kind of think of the casting, and I agree that Samuel Jackson really sells the movie. He's the, good character. And I know we kind of talked about how Uma Thurman's character, not to take anything away from her, but the character was just kind of like, there. But
John Travolta is not trying very hard. Like I said, he's very I did not know I could like John Travolta until I saw Blowout. And when I saw Blowout, I was like, wow, I think John Travolta is a very good actor. But I think a lot of times he's lazy. I think he doesn't bother to try,
Yeah, he does seem to be kind of phoning it in this one. In my opinion, they probably should have went with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, except Marvin might have actually gotten shot in the face. Even Harvey Keitel as the wolf, even he seems to be phoning this in.
Yeah, he didn't seem to really, especially an actor of his caliber, really just wasn't given the, didn't seem to be giving it his all.
Either that, or maybe he was being dragged down by Tarantino's performance.
Acting as a charisma magnet.
So I feel like we've really illustrated, why this movie sucks. It's just poor acting, poorly written. Nothing happens. It's just the soundtrack is terrible. Nothing about this movie is worth your time. And if Pulp Fiction is your favorite movie,
your favorite movie sucks.